I'm Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll welcome Quincy Rose and Gillian Lee, director and star, respectively, of a new indie film, Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends. Stick around. Just when you thought that era was over, these kids are bringing effing back to effing movies. All right. No one's hung up. Just hearing the title, I, Gillian, I saw you, like, out of the corner of my eye, I saw you laughing. So I can't not. I know. It's great. It's great.
It's the best.
You know, it's the kind of thing where when the title came across my email, I went, okay, I don't care what the movie is. I got to have this one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got to do it. Guilty secret. Some of my favorite movies are sex comedies. Porky's, American Pie, Hollywood Nights. I'm a big, unapologetic fan of one of the most sexploitative indie film genres there is. When they are funny, that is. and go in directions that no one saw, getting us from beginning to end with dollops of sex and amusing situations. Fortunately, Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends, and yes, I just love saying that over and over again, it meets my high standards for the category. It's funny, it's sexy, and it brings a twist in Act 3 that maybe the title gives away, but the execution is perfect. Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends is writer, director, producer, editor, and come on, it's an indie after all, Quincy Rose's second feature film. Following on the heels of Miles to Go. Now, his family background bears further investigation. His father, Mickey Rose, co-wrote the early Woody Allen films. No kidding, Bananas, Take the Money and Run, and What's Up, Tiger Lily. You know, the so-called early funny Allen films. Mickey Rose's other writing credits include The Sid Caesar Show, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, The Dean Martin Show, The Smothers Brothers Show from the 70s, plus episodes of everything from the original Odd Couple and Happy Days to Charlie's Angels, and oh, I love this, Mr. and Mrs. Dracula, and a show I actually saw, The Chimp and Me.
I didn't even know all this. Didn't know this.
Yeah, it's The Chimp and Me. That's wonderful. I mean, the other credits are obviously the ones you put first, but I saw The Chimp and Me. As for actress Gillian Lee, who plays Laura in Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends, I have to count every time I say that because of all the alliteration. She's become a familiar face on the indie scene, appearing in City Baby, A Big Love Story, Echo Lake, and The Badger Game. She's also a playwright, the author of Hooked.
An award-winning playwright.
Now that I didn't know. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, she L.A. Theater Festival. She won Best Writer or Best New Play and Best Actress.
So were you punching up this script as you went through, or did you leave that to Quincy?
Nope, left it to Quincy.
Okay. All right. Body
positions were the only thing we talked about.
Oh, you mean Friends? I thought you meant, did I have any? No. Yeah.
And I'll also add, before we actually jump in here, that also starring in the film are Tyler Dawson, Christina Gooding, Graham Skipper, and Vanessa DeBasso. And having said that, Quincy Rose and Gillian Lee, who are clearly here, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks
for having me.
My pleasure. Of course, one of the best movie titles ever. Who gets the credit, Quincy?
Well, it was a little bit of a group effort. There was the film was called something else originally, and it was a little different of a film. And then in coming up with a new title, we were just kind of in a room shooting the shit, so to speak. And, you know, what could it be? This. And then I think I went home and said, or somebody said, like, Friends Fucking Friends. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty funny. And then we kicked that around for a bit. And then it was just apparent that nobody was going to let us put that on a poster or any kind of advertisement. They probably wouldn't want to talk about it. And so then I thought, oh, what if it was Friends Effing Friends? And at first it was just Friends Effing Friends. And we added the effing friends. So, you know, I don't know. I just thought it sounded funny. And it was a little bit of a group effort, though.
It does. Every time I say it, I'm grinning and Gillian is laughing. It works, right?
Yeah. I mean, you said the title gives a little bit of away, but maybe that's the extra effing friends that does it.
Yeah, I think that's
it. If it was just friends effing friends,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
or if there was a comma after the first friends, effing friends, you know, it all depends.
Effing friends. Now, that would be a good sequel.
Yeah.
Just effing friends, because then they're getting revenge on each other. You bring back the same group, but now they're all getting revenge on each other for whatever may happen in the movie. That
so many meanings to the word effing. So I mean, it's the way you can f someone.
Oh yes,
that's true. That's true, and it's a difference. I think the Supreme Court has said there's a difference between Bono and U2 shouting from the stage something like, you know, fuck this, or you know, fuck that, or and actually, you know, saying to a to someone, fuck you. There's a completely different setting. So, by the way, I think that there was a Canadian film that was like Friends Fucking or something like that, and they actually used fucking in the title, which is probably
that,
why
that sounds familiar.
Which is probably why no one's ever heard of it. But there's some, I think there's some actually some famous people who was one of their first films.
It sounds familiar, that title, but I scour all the indie films and stuff, so I that does sound familiar. You know, you do have trouble with the title. There are still certain news sources and places, morning shows and stuff, that are reticent about having, you know, a discussion about the film specifically because of its title, not because of the content necessarily.
But see, I think your timing is incredibly good coming off of, I mean, we have Donald Trump making it apparently okay to, you know, call a contender for the presidential nomination a pussy. So,
yeah.
And the morning shows are running that. So I think your timing is great to slip by friends, effing friends, effing friends.
I think calling someone a pussy is a good thing. I think Mr. Trump is very confused about the word and the meaning of the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Pussies are resilient, amazing things. So I don't know that it had its intended effect.
We're talking
for my 2 cents.
We're talking about cats now, right?
No, actually, we're talking about vaginas.
Oh, okay.
Calling someone a ball sack, for example, I feel like then you're really, I mean, those things are delicate. You have to be
They're
real
very delicate. That's true.
Pussies can take a pounding. Who said that? It wasn't Gilda Radner. It was somebody. Somebody said that, and they were right.
That's not me dinging, is that? Is that
no,
me?
No, it's me. It's actually Augie Duke texting me. Hold on. Let me turn my phone
on. Augie Duke's another wonderful actress, indie actress, works a lot. And Jillian and she have worked together, and great actress. Anyway, she's texting. But
he grew up with her. She's the best.
She's trying to get in. She's trying to horn in on your time, talking about ball sacks.
I know that timing of that text is just perfect.
Well, and I guess we know that she must have somehow heard ball sack and decided, I want in on this conversation.
100% that is what happened.
Yes. Her throat was burning when she heard the word ball sack.
Take it easy.
That's right.
Over here, Mr. Quincy.
Somebody said, you know, calling people a chicken, it doesn't make sense. I can't remember which comedian it was, but they were saying, you know, chickens actually, you know, you go to a cockfight, a chicken fight, these are very resilient creatures. They fight to the death. Their head will be hanging off. They're still fighting.
Totally.
So calling somebody a chicken is doesn't make sense either, but they don't always make sense.
Language.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you a Jew, Bob?
Am I a Jew? Boy, we're jumping right in. Yeah, by birth, anyway. I'm not really practicing.
Me too.
Are you really?
Yeah. I feel like this is all very, like, Jewy, like, semantics. Like, oh, you called him a pussy, but maybe that's good, and a chicken, and this guy's texting me, and whatever. It's, like, all very Jewish.
I think Marc Maron would say we're having a very Jewy conversation.
I love Marc Maron. I love him. Marc Maron, if you're listening, I love you.
Oh, well, check our archives. I've got an interview with him up there.
Oh, amazing. Okay, I will.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, and I heard that the Jewish word, you know, it's like, are you a Jew? Ish.
You know, by the way I behave, not necessarily like my culture, not necessarily my religion.
Got it.
Yeah, because you talk with your hands. So,
You know, my wife, who is not Jewish but converted, and not for my reasons, but for her.
Wow,
own,
Bob.
She said to me, she always liked Jewish guys, and I said, well, so why me? She said, well, you're as Jewish looking as I get, and I'm like, really? I don't even pick up on that. I don't obviously. Obviously, I'm the only one on the conversation who doesn't get that. Jillian,
yes.
coming back to ball sacks.
How
does a talented, beautiful actress like yourself respond to being given a script? Now, I got to ask, did the script have the title Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends when you saw it, or was it something else at that point?
No, it would have had that already.
So you get that, however you get this, and are you thinking, this is a compliment that they want me to read this, or I'm at the bottom of the barrel that this is what I'm getting?
I begged for this part.
Okay.
Begged.
Tell me.
Did like a bunch of tapes, made Quincy have coffee with me, bothered the casting director, Jamie Gallagher, a very talented woman, up, down, and sideways, stalked the cast, like hung out with Tyler, begged for the part. So, you know, and for whatever it's worth, not to undersell the sex because it's there and it's sexy. Mm-hmm. I was really just drawn to Laura and the whole world and Quincy. I was just really into Quincy. I really liked Miles to Go. It's hard to find good material at any level of the game. I think Quincy has a really stunning, dark, fucked up, interesting view of relationships. And it was interesting. We all went to go see Miles to Go. It had a screening in LA, and his girlfriend was there, and she's like maybe the nicest person ever to walk the face of the planet. And Quincy was saying that having made that film in the place that he was at and watching it in this new place that he's at, which is in a healthy relationship, was very confusing. I was in a really Laura-esque place when I read Friends Effing Friends, and it really resonated with me, and I begged for the part. So the sex, I paid no attention to it until we were on set. And then I was like,
So you were always interested in Laura, and Quincy, you had her in mind for Laura? This was...
Well, I didn't know who Jillian Lee was until...
okay.
Until Jamie and who was mentioned, Jamie Gallagher and Sarah Wallace, the casting directors, introduced me to them. We were searching for Laura. The thing about Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends is, on paper, Laura is not necessarily the lead. Technically they're all the leads, but it's not the main lead. But the thing is, it's the character that if you can't cast, you just can't make the movie. There's so much just emotionality riding on this, whoever plays that part, to be able to actually do it. And the thing that was made aware to me after searching and searching and searching and finally being introduced to Jillian was that I knew she encapsulated the essence of this character, or could. And after watching her stuff and then seeing her do a couple auditions, the begging really had nothing to do with my decision. I based it solely on her merit and talent. And she's a wonderful actress. And
but how long did you let the begging go on just to enjoy it?
Oh, it's still going on. I haven't shown her the final cut, so I'm letting her know that I could still change it.
I love to do it. I love it.
It was, you know, she really is just the best person for the job. And the whole time was just kind of, like she said, she was in a very Laura headspace at the time. So my job as a director was really more just getting her to not do anything extra for the character and just be in that headspace. But Jillian did everything to flesh out that character. And thank God we found her, because she really ties the whole film together. And I'm just blessed to have her had been in the film. You know, she really did exactly what I needed somebody to do for that.
I'm going to cry. You're going to make me cry, which is also very Laura-esque. But the best part, Bob, was Quincy. I begged for homework and I got it. And Quincy and I have similar taste in film. And like the best was I just watched Husbands and Wives like over and over and over again. And so enjoyed figuring out how to have a comedy about relationships. But the point in me saying that is that I didn't really realize we were shooting a comedy until after it was over. Like, I had no idea I was in a comedy at all. Left my brain. I didn't know we were making a comedy.
Well, I could see that. Yeah. I could see how maybe on paper it might not have come off as comedy, because Quincy, I mean, you definitely could have played it and directed it as a drama, a very, you know, intense kind of thing because of what's going on. But maybe I'm wrong. But to me, it was a sex comedy.
It's totally a sex comedy.
Yeah.
It's funny because for me, I understand what a sex comedy. I don't see it as a sex comedy. I just see it as a kind of slice of life dramedy, if you will, in the sense that the drama is supposed to be humorous. I view life from a comedy filter, and I can be in the worst situation and I'm still seeing why it's funny. And that I completely credit my father's, the way he bring me up. That's his doing. It's funny because I don't see the sex in it. I'm I'm very much like a surgeon around that. It's in there because it's what would really happen if that situation happened. And we try to make it real without making it too real. We're not doing Gaspar Noé's, Love, if you've seen that. I mean, that's, pretty much just a porno with some acting in between.
Right.
But this is, I just didn't want it to be two people are kissing and then they're in bed, but somebody's uncomfortable with the sheet. You know, it's like these little things that just make me think something's more realistic or not. But I wasn't focusing on the sex in it as opposed to the sex being the impetus to what's happening to the characters before and after the sex, and why are they so driven to it? So it's more for me is that what's interesting is why they're doing it and how they're handling it and how deceptive they're being, etc. But I don't actually look at it as a sex comedy as opposed to a comedy with sex in it, right, as opposed to a Porky's or
American Pie, right?
Or like American Pie, which I do love, yeah.
Which I love too, but yes, in Friends Having Friends, the sex is not the funny. I think the circumstances are the funny.
Right.
A sex comedy, though, also is finding the hilarity in these, in the way we relate, I think. And the sex that happens when we're not being physical, but we're sort of like mind-fucking each other and all the ways in which you can fuck someone.
I describe it as a sex comedy because, there is sex. I mean, you're actually seeing sexual activity as opposed to it being implied, like if it was an episode of Frasier, for example. But, I mean, that would be – it's all implied there, but you never see anything. But the other thing is with the title, Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends, it has got to – there's got to be sex, but also the dialogue is the other thing that to me makes it a sex comedy. Because you give that to us right at the beginning when Jillian as Laura is in the restaurant with the two guys and they're talking and they're having this conversation about their penises, and one is Tyra, one is named as penis Tyra Banks, and the other is Kate Moss, right? So. And then Laura says to them, and I think I consider you as the audience at this point, and you say to the two guys, would you stop talking about your penises? And, I thought, okay, this is a sex comedy. I thought so before I saw any body parts. It's a sex comedy. And I laughed at various things. I mean, I can see talking to you, and obviously, very few people have seen the movie at this point that we're discussing it. Probably – in the introduction, Porky's was probably – that was a little – that may have sent people in the wrong direction. But I definitely see it being very close to the spirit and of the American Pie films, in that the relationships – those are – sex is kind of central to them, but the relationships are really what it's about. And it's, a lot in those movies is being – even though the guys seem to have the main parts, the women are driving the sex. I mean, the women are driving the thing, and I think it's a nice, it's a little older than the guys and the men and the women in American Pie are, These are people who are, you know, I presume have careers, although it's never really discussed. You know, I'm guessing, you know, everyone's mid-20s-ish to me, maybe a little earlier. But they're after that period. So anyway, that's, you know, that's how I came to that description.
I have no problem with people referring to it as a sex comedy or whatever. It's like people will refer to it as a romantic comedy. We even refer to it as like a postmodern romantic comedy. But it's really, it's more of a comedy with drama and romance, and it's a comedy about sex and sexual engagement. But again, that topic at the beginning that you're talking about, the two guys goading each other about their penises, is really grounded in reality. And the fact is that those two characters used to mess around with each other, and they're so comfortable with the fact of who they are now today and in their own sexuality, and just they're just okay with it all. It was a time in their life that they're making fun and teasing each other, but they're doing it in a very serious manner again. So once again, it's not joking about each other's penises because it's funny to make fun of gay people or something like that.
Right.
These guys really had these experiences. And, you know, as a writer and a filmmaker, I'm trying to shed a little bit of light. I know it's not like it's not any kind of, you know, like film that's going to be saving lives, but something I've known. Well, you never know. Comedy does help a lot of people. If somebody finds it funny, that'd be good. But that's a thing that I was talking to another somebody was interviewing, and they were asking me about that scene and stuff, and I was just saying, you know, anytime I can shed a little light on something that is pretty taboo still, something that I'm not ashamed I personally went through, and I know everybody I went through it with, they don't seem to want to talk about it, but I have a lot of friends that after admitting it, they'd be like, that happened to me when I was that, you know, or whatever. Like, it's not a big deal. And so I just thought, like, it's not like a very serious piece of that, but it just any way I can start shedding light on subjects that are actually real and layered, then I think it's a good thing.
Rick
and
Quincy,
on top of that, yes.
Why didn't we see Tyler Dawson and Grand Skipper fuck? Like, what? Like, why didn't we see that?
No, they did, but they were doing it in their trailer during the filming.
Can we make a sequel? And Laura doesn't have to be, I'm not looking for a job here, like, forget the sequel for me, but could, like, the two of them have sex? Because they are two of the finest actors I have ever worked with in my life,
yes.
And they're the chillest dudes, and they really like each other, and I would like to see them fuck.
Yeah. You know, interesting enough, when I was first trying to get this film made years before, I had a company say to me, listen, we have this great deal with this company who's in the realm of making gay-centric films, and would you be interested in turning it into an all-guy cast? And yeah, at the time, I wasn't, but now it's like something I would think like and I wasn't because I was offended. I just had seen – I'd written it through this way, and I wanted to see it that way. But, you know, it's funny. You know, you bang your head against the wall enough times, and that actually – whatever the change is, it doesn't have to be from straight to gay or anything. It could be just, you know, something you didn't intend, and you'll suddenly be willing to do it. But, yeah, anyway, so maybe that's the film we'll get them to do it in.
Interesting. By the way, I was going to throw in at some point before, I was going to say another film, if you enjoyed last year, if you enjoyed Trainwreck, mm-hmm. and were comfortable with the sex and the sexuality and the language and this movie would be perfect for you because, you know.
Yeah. You know. This is like Trainwreck. I mean, it's in line with like Girls or Transparent as far as the sexuality, or that film Afternoon Delight. I mean, these, I actually feel like those shows and those films, they go further. They are very much visual at what you're seeing. It's not, you know, partial nudity. It's you know, at times full frontal, male, women, you know, all of it. It's, I don't think they shy away from it. And I think they're just going for an element of realness, you know, which is what I was going for, you know.
You know, well, Jillian, let me ask you something. From a woman's point of view, in a lot of the movies that, like I mentioned earlier, they're always very male-centric, and it's all about the guys trying to get sex and trying to manipulate the women, that kind of thing. Was this more even-handed than that in your view? Did you feel that, you know, it was the guys, it was whatever the guys wanted which was happening? I mean, I asked that as a man, but also as a viewer, I didn't see that. It seemed to me that the women were pretty much controlling, you know, the character's sexuality and what they did more than
Well, Bob, if I can speak from a man's point of view,
of course.
That's okay. I'm just kidding. I want to speak from a woman's point of view because I am one, I guess.
I wasn't on set, but I'm thinking yes.
I was attracted to this particular role because I think that I often see stories portrayed in big budget movies and smaller ones and in things I read and what have you, where women are totally in control and like denying men to some extent. Like that's something that I, you know, they have to go between this guy and that guy, and they get to decide, you know, to whatever extent. And what I experienced in my life, for whatever reason, was a lot of wanting to have a partner and wanting to lock someone down into a relationship or into a commitment and not being able to. Mm-hmm. And at times having multiple situations at once where it seemed like no one was interested in being in a monogamous relationship with me. And that's really painful. And it's also really true. I don't know too many. I don't have too many girlfriends who are like, I don't know if I should be this guy's girlfriend or this guy's girlfriend. I feel like I have a lot of girlfriends that are like, yeah, I kind of feel like I'm dating these dudes. And like, if any of them were like down to make an effort, I'd be down. And it's kind of sad, and it's just something I'm seeing a lot. And that's what was attractive to me about this part, not because it's a particularly joyful thing to experience or something that I want to promote or that I want to continue in my life or in anyone's, but that's real. Like Laura wants a committed relationship from anyone, it seems like, and that's likely why she's not finding one, because it's not coming from an honest place. She's not really loving any of these men. She's just sort of wrapped up in a, I don't want to be alone. Well, and I think when you're coming from a place of lack of self-esteem as a woman, men can smell it and they run in the other direction. But I don't see it. I don't see that portrayed in too many things, because it's like this really sad part. I think Lena was starting to do that with Tiny Furniture and in some ways with Girls, but what do you know? Like, she got the dude. That's why I was attracted to this. So as a very long answer to your question, I do think that there's an empowerment in showing honestly how degrading and vulnerable it can feel and look as a person desperate to be in love with someone. Are the women in this film making all the decisions? Is it equal? Sure, to some extent. For Laura, she is very much throwing herself at the mercy of the wind and the thought and the want of every man everywhere. And that's what makes her so tragic. And it's also kind of what makes her funny.
Well, one of my favorite exchanges in the whole film is between Laura and Jacob. Jacob, who is Laura's not quite boyfriend at this point.
Not boyfriend.
Not boyfriend. And Laura knows that Jacob is sleeping with her best friend. She knows, she has this knowledge. There's other things maybe she doesn't know, but he's telling Laura that he feels guilty about all this. He says, I'm anxious all the time, and all I do is lie to everybody. To which you say, matter-of-factly, do you want a blowjob? I mean, it's just like, you know, would that calm you down? Would that stop all this guilt nattering?
Because as women, to some extent, and I'm going to, like, go ahead and take that back. In my life, as me, in my person, sometimes exchanging sex for love feels like the only thing I can offer. Now, I've grown and I'm still continuing to, but this kind of acknowledgement that we can't breastfeed in public, but tits can be on a billboard, it makes it very confusing to figure out how to inspire through your femininity. So even as Laura is trying to be a friend to Jacob in that moment, and I do believe that she is, half of it is very selfishly, I want your love and affection, so I don't care what your problems are.
Right.
And that's sort of like a love-addicted drug issue, if you will. And the other half of it is, I want to be here for you, but I don't know how through my femininity to love you other than to make it a sex act. It's sad.
Sure. I mean, and then also the fears that make you act in a way, you know, of this person's about to leave me.
100%.
What could I do instantly to keep them here now?
Yes, yes. And women, yeah. And women and men and everybody does, yeah. You know. I had a guy once. I hope my dad's not watching this. I had a guy once.
I think it's too late to worry about that.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Fetterman. I had a guy once who I was really good friends with eat me out until I was his girlfriend.
Oh my God.
And okay. It worked. And it was like really it worked.
Quincy, I was laughing too hard. Was that a spit take with you, or did you put the water down?
Oh, no, I just stopped.
Okay.
I was just making sure I heard.
People will try anything, and he was very good at giving head, and it worked.
Hey, power to him, power to you.
I mean, like, we never should have gotten together, and now we're not, and that's why. You see, if Laura gives Jacob the blowjob in that moment, it's a Band-Aid.
Well, that's
going to go.
But see, that's what I thought when – and I didn't bring it up for shock value. I brought it up because – Jacob is suddenly somewhat in touch with his feelings at this point, and he's thinking, geez, I feel bad about this. I'm lying to everyone. And Laura's like, just shut up, and I'll give you a blowjob, and we'll just move on to the next thing. Yeah, I see that.
I mean, Quincy Rose, and this is why I was attracted to the project. Sorry to talk about you like you're not here. But Quincy Rose is artfully figured out how to look at these like really desperate and funny for that reason attempts for connection in Miles to Go. Like, one of my favorite aspects of that movie is, not to get off track, but is this idea that he keeps going to get these massages. And yet he has this woman that like so desperately wants to have a connection with him. I feel like in the same way, Jacob is like actually trying to vibe with Laura at that moment. He's like, yo, homie, I'm not feeling well. Be there for me. And maybe if Laura could step up to the plate and get out of her head and get out of her fear and be like, I got you. Like, let's work on this together. How can we get through this into a healthier place? Maybe there's a future for Laura and Jacob. But it's her instantaneous, I've got to satiate. I've got to keep you near me. I can't wait a moment. Impatience and desperation that is driving everyone away from her. And that's funny, sort of.
Jillian, had you I admit, I have not seen other films that you've been in. Have you had?
Ew!
I'm sorry. I only saw this film yesterday.
Admit that.
I'm
never
sorry.
Admit that.
I'm sorry, but I'm
before she agreed to work for me, I had to tell her that I watched every film.
I love all the filmmakers I've worked with so much that I want their work to be seen. And it's I don't have to tell the two of you, it's very hard to get your
Absolutely.
Work out there. So any human being that can take an hour or an hour and a half and enjoy the blood, sweat, and tears, it makes me so happy.
Well, I enjoyed the film. I actually went to – I tracked down your website, and I watched your reel this afternoon, and I thought, I do want to see more of her.
You should. Absolutely. Yeah.
What I was curious about is there is quite a bit of disrobing in this film. Had you had to do that in other films?
In City Baby, I take my top off. Shout out to David Morgan, who had to deal with me on a nude beach in Portland. In Badger Game, I remember laying down in the middle of a Chinese restaurant trying to negotiate with Josh Wagner and Tom Zambeck how many seconds and in which way I would be laying naked in a bathtub. So that scene's in there. And the DP on that movie, Zach Adams, who's super talented and one of my favorite DPs that I've worked with, he was really kind, and it was nice. I think I could be wrong, but I think, God, I feel like such a ditz. I feel like this is my first sex scene on film.
Well, and the reason I ask is this is gonna sound really weird, but in 2 weeks, Mr. Skin is gonna be coming back on the show. He's been on a few
times. Oh, I'm
already
on that with it.
Well, I just wondered if you would like to offer to him what you think would be your best scene without your clothes, so we can at least you can weigh in.
Bob, this is disgusting. Listen, I can't continue this conversation. I have absolutely nothing to say about Mr. Skin. I'm very proud of my body, and I think as a 60-year-old woman, I'll be fucking psyched that I did this stuff, and I cannot wait to be married and have my husband totally be okay with all the things I have done with my body. End of conversation.
So that was the part. Okay, so we had the conversation about what your dad couldn't hear, but when I asked about Mr. Okay, then I'm gonna throw all caution to the wind, and we're gonna get off the subject in 1 second. But there is a tattoo visible in the film, and I'm just wondering, was that for the film? Was that a temporary thing, or is there actually a horse-drawn carriage on your back?
That's none of your business.
Okay. That's fair. That's absolutely fair. I just was like, wow. It's a very, whether it's permanent or temporary, it's a very interesting tattoo, whatever the case.
I'm a very interesting woman.
I would not argue that for a second. And just to be fair, Quincy, any tattoos?
A lot of tattoos, yeah.
Take off your shirt. Woo!
No, I don't do that, but you could see me pretty much with nothing on in Miles to Go. So you'll see all the tattoos. But yeah, I even get a real tattoo in Miles to Go while the character gets it. So I got it. But yeah, a lot of tattoos. Okay. I'm a big fan.
All right. And any nude scenes you want people to be aware of? Mr. Skin, now they do both. They do men and women now.
Oh, if they're interested in my tush, I mean, go look at Miles to Go. 43 minutes and 28. No, I don't. I don't. Who knows?
All right, Jim, I've done your dirty work here.
What'd you say?
What's that?
I said Jim, that's Mr. Skin. I've done your dirty work here.
There you go.
All right, let's cut back around to other things. Quincy, I was completely stopped in my tracks when I was reading your bio, and I'm sure you'd be talking about this a lot more as you're out talking about this film, but your father Mickey's amazing career. How did his work as a TV and screenwriter influence your decision to try the business?
I don't know that his... Well, I mean, obviously I loved all his work, but I think it was more just being around his work. And, you know, ever since I was a newborn, I was on like the Johnny Carson set, or I remember being 4 years old and wandering around it, or 2 years old and that kind of stuff, and going to, you know, Happy Days tapings, or, you know, all the various shows that he had friends working on, and films and visiting films and all of that stuff. So that all, I mean, for me, it just really made me very wide-eyed for the fun everybody seemed to be having. What an interesting way it seemed to be making a living. I don't even know if I knew what making a living was back then. I still kind of don't. But it was, you know, all I knew is, you know, certain people's dads were very, you know, like suit, tie, this is what they did, and lawyer, this, that. And my dad was like, you know, up, and I would hear him writing, and he'd wake me up in the middle of the night to watch Monty Python or something. And just very inspirational, I guess. Just kind of in my blood, it just kind of woke me up to wanting to do it.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday. It was Dick Van Dyke was on with Gilbert Gottfried on his show.
Oh.
And it's a great interview. I'd recommend anybody listen to it. But it was
I loved it.
It was very weird. They were talking about the old Dick Van Dyke show, and Carl Reiner, who created the show and played Alan Brady, apparently, according to Dick Van Dyke, Carl's young son at the time, Rob Reiner, was on the set all the time and repeatedly got in trouble for grabbing Mary Tyler Moore's ass. And so, having heard that, I until I read your bio, I would never have thought to ask you this. But all the sets that you were on, did your hands ever get you in any trouble, or were you too young at that point?
No, I was a pretty restrained kid as far as that goes. If anything, I probably would have been running around like breaking things. Never got into trouble. I was very respectful of my father's work and very much in awe of my father I think most people, whether if they have a relationship with their parents and they really respect them, I think you do become a bit in awe if you're really, you know, if they're doing what they're doing and being parents too. And my dad was he was a big guy and both tall and strong, and he had a lot of friends. He was usually, if not always, the funniest person in the room, and usually didn't want to be in the room, but it would still be the funniest. So it was just kind of, I just had this huge respect and just was awestruck by him. So it was just more wandering around and with just big eyes, like, this, it looks amazing. How much fun is this? and wouldn't it be amazing if I could do this one day, you know?
Well, it wouldn't occur to me before, but suddenly I'm hearing this story and I'm thinking a little parallelism, Carl Reiner, Rob Reiner, Mickey Rose, Quincy Rose. I mean, the similarity, and I'm assuming that your dad probably knew Reiner.
Very well. Yeah, they worked together for years. My dad and Woody came up together, and they were writing a lot of comedy for people, and these are all New Yorkers who, some of them relocated to Los Angeles, Reiner and Gary Marshall. My dad and he were in the Army Reserves together.
Yeah,
and
I love Gary Marshall. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Gary's great. He's such a sweetheart.
Funny.
Carl Reiner's a sweetheart, and they're all I'm not particularly close with either one of them, but I just know that from the experiences I have had and from what my dad used to say and from everybody who interacts with them, they're just very lovely. And but my dad and Gary Marshall used to put on, little shows for the troops on reserves and the people who were back. And and then they connected. And I can't remember where they all worked together. Dick Van Dyke, my dad wrote for Carl Reiner. And
The Odd Couple.
The Odd Couple. And then, it's that whole group, Norman Lear, all of those people that my dad was very connected with. They all kind of came out of the same school, School of Hard Knocks. They all made it. They were the generation that came from nothing and made it. And I was the generation that came from something and blew it all.
No.
Hey, relax.
Really, really. Take a pill. Your dad, this amazed me.
Can't take pills anymore. Oh, but thank you.
Your dad wrote, and you know this, but people watching this or listening to this as an audio podcast won't know this. Your dad wrote "I Shot a Moose," which is got to be one of the greatest Woody Allen stand-up moments. As a matter of fact, when I realized that, I found the video on YouTube, watched it, and then shared it across
hilarious.
Every bit of social media, because it is such a hysterical moment. And to find out that your dad wrote it, all kudos. I mean, that was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they wrote so much together that that joke isn't the same without Woody's touch to it. But it's hilarious, and the concept. My dad was an absurdist. He was a man who thought it was funny to wear a cape around. When he picked my mom up on her first blind date, he was wearing a cape. He was known to wear a cape at the commissary. I don't know particularly why. Never told me about this. Didn't explain it.
Double desserts.
Yeah. And he was very just like there's a lot of anomalies from that generation. We just lost Richard Libertini. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are such unique, one of a kind people who made the way and paved the way before these types of characters existed. And they did it in real life. I mean, they were, you know, this is how they would behave, you know. So it was very, it's an interesting situation. But yeah, he did write that and a lot of other things. But yeah, it's hysterical. Have you ever heard it, Jillian? The moose routine? Yeah, you'll look it up later.
It's look hysterical. It up later. It just, I shot a moose. That's all you need to know. Actually, yeah, well, it's and I just put it in about 8 more places so people could find it easily. I love that. Yeah. I spent hours in the late 60s, early 70s when I discovered that. And it wasn't the video then. It was just the audio over and over and over again. But, you know, it was fun to research the relationship between Mickey Rose and Woody Allen, especially since Allen, who you know is your godfather, other people may not know that, is not known publicly for a lot of close friendships. A lot of people have this sense of him as a very lonely guy. But I want to share with people, this is what your dad said. I'm sorry, this is what Woody said about your dad's passing. He said, "Mickey was one of the funniest humans I know, a true original and a total eccentric and a wonderful first baseman. We played a lot of baseball together. Once, when I asked him what death meant to him, he said, 'No more Malteds.'"
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's very nice. Now, you have two credits on your IMDb that are related to Allen films that were obviously later, Melinda and Melinda and Whatever Works, which was the Larry David film. Were they acting parts? Were they?
Well, in Whatever Works, I just happened to be in New York and he was filming and I went down and said hi and he's, you know, we were just chatting and he said, "If you want to sit on the bench, you know, go ahead."
That's amazing.
So I just sat and watched Larry David yell at a kid, and then Evan Rachel Wood, and he had a little spliff, which I was happy to sit there and watch. Why not? And Melinda, I did a little acting scene with Amanda Peet and a wonderful actress named Katie Chrysler, now Katie Chrysler Black, so that was just a few lines in a, you know, a little film, which, you know, was very exciting to do and just such a unique pleasure. And not only did I grow up watching those films but I always felt a familial connection and as if it was, you know, some perversion of the world around me that I grew up in. And so it was very exciting to be a part of that, even in the smallest way. So.
And I'm sorry, Katie Chrysler Black. Can I get that with the rich Corinthian leather, or do I have to pay extra for that?
Yes, Chrysler Black. Exactly.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No,
it's a good joke, Bob. It's a good joke. Yes, you got it.
So, okay, one more question about your dad and Woody, and we'll let that topic die, and we're going to wrap up. I swear to you. But I couldn't find this in anything I read. Woody did a film after his partnership with your dad was, you know, professionally over. He did Broadway Danny Rose, and I know people in writing wonder, was that title a tribute to your dad or was that incidental?
I don't know. I mean, I can't answer what Woody did. I've heard him interviewed and asked, "Did this have anything to do with your previous your partner Mickey Rose?" And he's, "No, it's just a title," but who knows what's in your head when you're doing things. I mean, I've written characters with not the name Woody, but other family members, and I don't even think when I'm writing it, but it's probably subconscious a little bit. If you look at Husbands and Wives, the two characters are Michael and Judy, and those were my parents, but that still doesn't mean anything.
Oh, really?
But,
I didn't get that.
Yeah,
I mean,
wow.
I don't think he thinks in that way, and maybe he does, but it's not something that he overthinks. So if it happened, it happened. But yeah, but who knows? You'd have to ask him, and I don't know that you'd get an answer. So.
I don't know that I'd have the opportunity to ask the question. Yeah, so exactly. I was just curious. All right, as we wrap up, and you guys have been great with your time and put up with a lot of crap. Thank you, Jillian. Jillian... Another outtake. Thank you very much. Jillian, what's next for you? Film, theater? What do you got going on?
So much. I'm working on a television series I wrote and created with my partner Samantha Jacober, which is really exciting. I can't say much more than that, but it's going to be really, really nice to it's been really nice to write in a television format, and it's going to be really nice to go to work every day with the same people. So that I'm psyched on in my future. And I have been rewriting my play Hooked extensively since it won the Los Angeles Theater Festival. I'm entertaining the idea of doing it for Fringe this year, although I'd really like to put it up in London. So that's maybe in the works. Quincy knows how much I love that city, and there's a really hot guy there that anyway. Huh. So I want to do that. And then the other thing, was there something else? No, I guess that's it. It's my play, and then I'm writing a new play. So that's exciting.
You got to the hot guy in London and forgot your train of thought.
I know. You know what? I went to London this year for a movie that I was in a film festival, and what an amazing city.
I agree. I was there in December, and my wife and I are just like, she keeps saying, can you find another excuse? Can you find more work so we can go
back? I know.
There?
Yeah. But, you know what? I remember before the hot guy, I remembered I was going to say, I'm training to be a yoga teacher. And I'm really psyched because I want to work with, there's a company called Uprising Yoga, and they take yoga to state penitentiaries and juvenile detention centers and foster care and various situations where kids, young adults who are struggling or might not have access to yoga are getting involved. Shout out to Uprising Yoga. If you have anything to give or if you're interested, definitely look that up. They're an amazing company. But wanting to volunteer with them led me to wanting to get certified as an instructor. I don't know that I'm a little busy with the writing and the acting, but I'm excited to be able to bring yoga to my community and my friends and family. And I'm also working with a company called The Burrito Project, where once a month we make 1,000 burritos and give them to people living on Skid Row in that community. And
that's a really good company.
So I try to give them as much time as I can. And I don't know. I'm really looking forward to whatever's about to happen. It's an exciting, special time.
Well, it's not going to sound as funny now, but when you said taking yoga to prisons and such, I was thinking, smells like sitcom to me.
Yeah. You know what? Sure. I think I'm going to leave Orange is the New Black to do their thing for a little while. But there's definitely something funny about culture clash. Mm. And not that yoga in prison is a culture clash necessarily, but there is something funny about culture clash. And on that note, I'm very excited about the TV show.
All right. Well, and let me leave it with that with you. When you get the TV show off and where people can see it, come back. Come do the
I
show
promise.
Again. All right?
Yes.
All right. And hopefully that'll make up for whatever stupid things I've said. And Quincy, what's next for you?
Well, first and foremost, Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends.
Woo!
The film that we've been talking about. It is not released yet, but it is making its world premiere debut in the Cinequest Film Festival in San Jose, Silicon Valley, this March 5th, with screenings 5th, 6th, and 10th. So that's first and foremost, and getting this project sold, etc., and getting it out in the world so I can stop thinking about it, even though I never will, because you know all the projects just linger in your head,
like,
and you keep
thinking.
Yeah, I mean, a child you try to abandon at a shopping mall parking lot, you know, in the heat, locked in a car.
Much.
But yes, no, I'm kidding. They just films are like herpes; they kind of don't go away, but you embrace them.
Wow.
So that's first and foremost, and so Cinequest Film Festival for that. I will be attending that. I believe Jillian will be attending that. There's several, Tyler and Graham, and I even believe Vanessa will be making it out, and Christina.
And we're all sharing a hotel room.
Ooh,
look at that!
There's a new movie. There's the
sequel.
Don't
say that. We don't need them finding this out. Don't want them to triple charge you. They were joking.
I want a camera in that room.
Too bad.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Then, so we'll be there. Come on out if you're in the San Jose area or Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Bay Area, Palo Alto, all of that. Come check us out. Say hi. Punch me in the face. Do whatever. And then other than that, I'm in pre-production on my next feature film, which I will not give any details away on. But other than to say it's I start shooting, if everything stays on schedule, in May in New York City. So that's a very exciting independent project that I'm thrilled about. And more to come with that. And
Well, folks, as Quincy said, you can find Friends, Effing Friends, Effing Friends on the film festival circuit in the coming months. It begins March 5th, 6th, and 10th with the world premiere at Cinequest in San Jose, California, as it seeks out good word of mouth publicity. Hopefully this will be a good start to that. Awards and, of course, a very sweet distribution deal. The website for the film is, of course, Friends, Effing Friends, Effing Friends, movie.com. And are you going to tell me that Friends, Effing Friends, Effing Friends.com was not available?
It was not available.
Oh, my God.
I actually don't know, but I just always feel it's good to let people know it's a movie.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, well, that's true. Could be a Tumblr site for swingers.
Yeah, well, just having that domain, just owning that domain, I can assure you some of the bizarre, unsolicited emails that come to this email, anyway, I could have a whole second profession if this fails. I'll just say that. And and we're also on Facebook, Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends, and check out our trailer. Yeah.
And it, Twitter also, Friends Effing.
Friends Effing on Twitter, exactly. And Jillian's on Twitter. What are you, the Jillian Lee?
That's right. And on Instagram, I'm the Jilly Situation, because there always is one. Oh, right. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd just like to take this opportunity to apologize to my mother, Marilyn Harris, and my stepdad, Lee Harris, both of my sisters, Tate and Alexis, my father, Ken Fetterman, and my stepmother, Maria Fetterman, because I love you, and I did take my clothes off in this movie.
Ah, yes, but it wasn't my fault. In fact, I begged her not to, and she insisted, folks.
I love my family. I love you guys so much. You're never going to see this movie. Don't come. I love it.
Just a quick story on Miles to Go. After the big screening we had at the ArcLight Cinemas in Hollywood, and I had become very close friends with Amelia Mork, one of the actresses who I'd cast in a dinner sequence, who had originally tried out for the lead or didn't, but then we offered her to see if she wanted to, and she turned it down because she wasn't comfortable with all of it. In any case, after seeing the film, her parents came up to me. And her dad said, "I just want to thank you for not giving my daughter the lead in this film." Because he didn't want to see her in those situations.
Oh,
so
my God.
Much like she's apologizing to her family, other parents will be grateful that their daughters did not get cast. And I'm bringing families together is what I'm really trying to do with my career. Look at it that way.
Very good.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much for your time, Bob. It's really a pleasure to be on Mr. Media and to chat with you and the lovely Jillian Lee. I'm very excited for people to see this film. I think they'll get a good kick out of it. I think there's a lot of honesty in it, and I think people will relate on a multitude of levels. So let's hope they do.
My pleasure. Well, Quincy Rose, Jillian Lee, thank you both so much for a very entertaining hour and for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Bob, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of 20-something millennials who want to look, but don't know if they should, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Language is not an issue. As you might guess with someone interviewing people who have a movie they're promoting called Friends Effing Friends Effing Friends, I'm not sensitive about language or body parts or any of those things. So,
oh, nice.
Have no fear.
Okay.
I'm going to take my top off.
Won't be anything I haven't already seen.
Okay. Oh.
All right. There you go.
Oh,
see?
Way.
That's good. That's good.
Take it easy.
And now I have an outtake. Thank you very much.